Hello there. Welcome to another monthly installment of the Plum Club podcast series. The Plum Club was founded in 1983 by a small group of distinguished manufacturers, first as a social club. Over the years, the Plum Club has evolved into one of the jewelry industry's leading supplier organizations. This newly created podcast series is just one example of many initiatives which the club's developed in order to best serve our industry. I sincerely hope you will enjoy this podcast, and most importantly, I hope you find something useful and maybe even a little bit helpful within my podcast and certainly within each and every one in the series. So today's podcast is entitled Diamond Trends in Today's World. Although that's a pretty broad-based title, the focus today will be on the actual diamond itself. Not going to be discussing diamond styling trends, fashion trends. That's another topic. My purpose here today is to discuss trends in diamond shapes, qualities, sizes, single stones versus composites. And of course, we're going to talk about mined versus lab grown. Certainly a very hot topic today. For our purposes, we're going to focus mostly on diamonds as they are being used within the bridal category. I think we can honestly all agree that 2020 is a year unlike any of which we've ever seen before. I don't think any of us really want to see a year like this again, but it certainly has had a lot of challenges for all of us. We're all living in uncertain times, all facing unique challenges within both our personal and professional lives. So diamond jewelry today might not be the highest priority for many of us, but I believe many of us within the industry are actually seeing really better than expected sales as we start building back up in the reopening process throughout the country. That's what I've certainly been experiencing, and from talking to a lot of my colleagues in the industry, that's what I'm hearing as well. So at this point, I'd like to introduce myself to you. I am Jeff Cohn. I'm Vice President of Sales for KGS Jewels. We're otherwise known as KG Diamonds or K Gerd Halal. We are a vertically integrated diamond company originally formed in Surat, India in 1967. We're a DTC side holder. Our core business focuses on two main divisions, our loose diamond cutting business, which we sell through multiple channels to pretty much everybody throughout the world, six offices throughout the world, about 3,000 employees, and then our finished jewelry division, which is headed in New York, and that we focus mostly on selling the majors or the larger chains. As for myself, I've been in the industry since 1983, starting out in my father's retail stores, and switching my path to the manufacturing and wholesale side by the late 1980s. I've spent now over 35 years in this industry, and I can honestly say it's an industry that I truly love, and it's been good to me, and it's really, I've met incredible, incredible people over this journey, so it's really been a great ride. My focus has always been on diamond bridal jewelry, although I have been involved in quite a bit of fashion as well as a lot of the initiatives that the Diamond Promotion Service over the years has started, and other various of my retail accounts, what they've started. So anyway, it's my privilege to present this podcast, and once again, I thank the Plum Club for allowing me this opportunity. So over the course of the next 20 minutes or so, I would like to talk about a few specific topics as they pertain to diamonds, or a bit more specifically, diamonds which are being used for engagement rings, or DER, diamond engagement rings, as the category is often referred to. I have broken this into three main areas of discussion. First, I would like to start by reviewing the overall trends and stats in the U.S. bridal market as they pertain to diamond shapes, sizes, and price point. This is a great starting point, but really only will tell part of the story. Next, I want to break down these stats and discuss how they change according to 1, the demographics and regions, and then 2, how they change according to the three major sectors of our retail market, which would be independent, majors, and online. Finally, I'm going to discuss traditional versus non-traditional examples of center stone, which is certainly a very hot topic right now. I have compiled data from several sources, such as the Knott's Annual Bridal Survey, Modern Brides Annual Bridal Survey, the Bain Annual Report on Diamonds, and several others. Some of the numbers and trends do vary slightly according to the source, but overall, they tend to mostly align together. I will also be basing a lot of this content from practical knowledge, which I have gained over my 35 plus years in the industry, again, of which I've been focused mostly on diamond bridal product throughout my career. So let's go. So the one thing we can all agree on is that diamonds remain a very serious investment. The average cost of an engagement ring is currently $5,900. While that is the overall average, we also know that a third of all couples are spending between $1,000 to $3,000, and 10% of all shoppers are spending less than $1,000. Out of these shoppers, 85% are purchasing new rings, as opposed to using a stone which was from a family heirloom, and 45% of the new ring purchasers opted for a custom-made ring. The most popular center stone, as one would expect, is of course a diamond, with 86% of consumers opting to go that route. Round, of course, is the most popular shape, accounting for about 50% of all sales. The most popular fancy shapes are a little bit hard to decipher, as that data is heavily dependent on factors such as budget, region, and type of retail channel where that purchase is being made. In general, we are seeing emerald cuts, cushions, ovals, and pear shapes selling well across most channels. Looking at my company, for example, we cut well over 125,000 GIA certified stones per year. We personally cut about 55% rounds and then the balance fancies. The fancy production which we cut would mostly consist of emeralds and cushions, which would be a direct result of probably three factors. One, demand. Two, the type of rough we are buying. And three, of course, the yield that we're going to get from the cut stone. So let's dive into some more numbers. About 50% of engagement rings sold last year were between 1 to 2 carats, while about 25% were 2 carats and above. The average size of the total ring, including side stones, would be 1.75. 25% of all engagement rings sold last year had some kind of halo around the center stone, regardless of the shape or the center. 54% were set in white gold. According to Shane & Company, one of the country's largest bridal specialists, the average size center that they sold last year was 0.92. Shane also reports that mountings with a halo is their most popular setting. According to the Knott's 2019 bridal report, 70% of engagement rings were purchased at a brick-and-mortar store, with the balance being purchased online. Based upon my personal experience, I was surprised to see 30% of the rings being purchased online. That seems a bit high to me, but the Knott's data is telling us otherwise. Within the 70% being purchased in brick and mortar, 40% of their total sales are being made at a local independent, while 30% are being made at a national or regional chain or a department store. So these numbers give us a very, very broad-based picture of the bridal market in 2019, which of course was pre-COVID, which is probably the last quote-unquote normal time that we can really look at. So switching gears, I want to quickly talk about some of my own insights within the business. These are in no means official. I don't have the hard data to support it, but this is just what I've been observing over the last 18 months to 2 years, both with my core business with KGS, as well as the many personals I've made over the last couple of years. Being a dad to two beautiful daughters, 28 and 30 years old, it seems like every single one of their friends have been coming to me for personals over the last couple of years. Personals are not one of my favorite things to do. Think of never sell a used car, never buy a used car from a relative. But if I don't help my kids out, I will certainly never hear the end of it. So, of course, I'm happy to help them out. So, both in my business and with my personals, I have found that fancies are certainly trending way above the 50%, which is stated by all the statistics. I am definitely selling way more fancies in the last 2-3 years than I had ever sold before. In my professional life through KGS, Ovals and pears have been unbelievably hot over the last 2 years. Not just in my sell-through to my accounts, but in their sell-through to the end consumer as well. Almost any bridal item I have placed with either of those centers has tested extremely well, and many have gone on to become core items for my accounts. 90% of what I sell to my accounts will have a halo around the center as well, for sure. With my personals, also, as I said, fancies have been incredibly hot, but as opposed to ovals and pears, it's really been all about emerald cuts and cushion shapes. Now, most of my personals are 2 carats plus, just on the center stones. Most of them are getting well into 5 figures, but I have probably sold about 60% of these shapes versus maybe 40% of rounds. As popular as the ovals and pears have been to the core accounts, as I just mentioned, I've sold very, very few of those in the personals. Overwhelmingly, both my professional accounts and my personal customers, they do want their rings set in either white gold or platinum. That's overwhelmingly their choice. So to sum up what we have now discussed, what is working, what is trending on a national level, that's very important information for every jeweler to understand. But of course, that's the equivalent of working in a sterile, lab-like environment. We all live in different regions, we all shop through different channels, and many of us on the wholesale side cater to the independent jeweler, while many others of us focus on the large chains. Taking all of those considerations into effect can tremendously change these numbers, which I've just spoken about. In short, what sells, what is trending in New York City, will most likely be pretty different than what is selling and trending in, say, Des Moines, Iowa. So, the second insight I'd like to talk about actually has two parts. First, I want to point out the different trends between separate regions of our country. And secondly, I will focus on the differences between our 3 main selling sectors, independent, majors, and online. So, if the average cost of an engagement ring is $5,900 on a national level, let's break that down by geographic region. According to the Knott's 2019 bridal survey, here are the average spends per region. Mid-Atlantic, $7,500. New England, $6,900. Southwest, $5,600. West, $5,500. South, $5,400. Midwest, $5,300. As one would imagine, this really corresponds very closely to the actual per capita wealth of each region. The regions with the major cities and major wealth are, of course, going to have more young couples with greater spending power, which will equate to more expensive rings being purchased. As I've mentioned several times before now, I've been doing tons of personals over the last few years. I live in the New York area, so the majority of my sales are local. So speaking from personal experience, I have very rarely sold any center stone less than 1.5 carats. The size of choice for these young New York couples seems to be right around 2 carats. Off the top of my head, I would say that 75% of what I have sold would be that size. It just seems to be the magic size which these urban upscale brides are looking for. As far as price goes, I would say the total price they're looking to spend is somewhere between $15,000 to $20,000. So, I mean, wow, this is very, very different. This is more than double what the Knott's numbers are telling us. But again, that's based on my own personal experience over the last couple of years, of which I've probably done at least 50 of these type of sales, and it's based in the New York area. So regionally, the data is going to very possibly be very different than what the data will show on a national level. As far as shapes and qualities, I would say the breakdown between round and fancy does hold true to the national average. I've probably been selling 50% round and 50% fancy. Where my experience differs than the stats would be within the fancies being chosen. In order of popularity, the shapes that I am selling are round, emerald cut, cushion, oval. That's it. I have not had one personal client ask me for a pear, marquee, princess, or anything else. Styling-wise, almost everyone has looked for very traditional styling. Emerald cut center with beautiful tapered baguettes, maybe trapezoids on the sides, round and cushion set with micro pavé shank, about half the time with a halo set around the center. just very clean and timeless looks. I think in some of the other regions, especially in the South, I will see larger centers set with a bit more elaborate mountings, but in the Northeast and West Coast, we definitely see more of a trend toward classic settings with the larger centers. As far as quality goes, there is a distinct difference between the traditional retail channels. Independents will normally focus on SI and above. The retail chain stores will predominantly play in I-1, I-2 for bridal, with their high-end product venturing into SI quality. Interestingly enough, the largest wholesale club in the country only sells VS quality, which is really counter to every other chain in the country. By all accounts, this strategy works extremely well for them. Of course, their business model is set up so they can work at a low margin, which would really not be sustainable by pretty much anybody else in the country. As for the online segment, it appears to be all over the place quality-wise. Of course, the most successful online retailers of certified stones focus on the customer choosing their own stone. Generally, this will be at SI and above. So where the difference in trends, at least to me, gets really interesting is when I look at the trends for each retail segment. As a company, we cut a lot of GIA certified stones per year. We pretty much start at half carat and higher. 80% of what we cut will be GIA certified. This is the part of our business which we sell to all of the retail channels. Our inventory is listed everywhere. It's available to all independents. We service thousands of them. We also supply loose stones to most of the chain stores and volume users and many of the online retailers as well. This is the part of the business which most closely follows the numbers and stats which we have already discussed. Our other side of the business, however, is a bit of a different story. That's the part where we supply finished diamond product to the majors. We do not have an independent side of the business, so our product is made for and sold to the larger retail chains, both brick and mortar and online. This is where we can really kind of throw away the numbers that were reported by The Knot, Modern Bride, etc. Selling to the masses changes everything. For start, the majors mostly play in the I-1, I-2 world, as opposed to the SI and above world, and that is for bridal. Within fashion, it often gets into the I-3 world, but again, our focus today is on bridal. This has been my own professional domain for more or less the last 20 years, so let me rattle off a few observations as they pertain to this particular market segment. Number one, bigger is better. Classic and tailored generally will be much slower than big and bold. While this tends to be especially true away from the cities, it still comes into play in the more urban areas as well. Bigger is definitely better. Composite or cluster tops are really, really strong. This is an item which you seldom see or hear too much on the independent side, but from the major chains, they just keep on selling and selling and selling. The trick here is to keep on refining the composite look and come up with a top that looks as close to a solitaire stone as possible. Biggest bang for the buck. Composites or clusters have been in our industry for literally a million years. I would say it has been over the last 15 years, maybe 20 years, where they have really taken off. I have not seen this trend slow down at all. If anything, we have seen some of these items still trending up. Every time someone comes up with a newer, better head, or what I'll call a mousetrap, it seems to just pick up and spike the sales once more. The trend towards fancy shapes have definitely hit the majors, just as with the independents. However, where we are seeing emeralds and cushions really trending in both certified goods and with independents, the chains are seeing very strong sales over the last 18 months or so in both oval and pear shapes. This will be equally the case with both center stone, single stone, center stone bridles and the composite heads, which I just had spoken about. Over the last six months pre-COVID, I have seen tremendous sell-through with oval shapes, especially with composite heads. As one would expect, the average price points will be much lower in the chain stores. For one thing, many of these rings are being purchased with long-term financing. And of course, the customer base is different. I have not seen much in terms of actual data, but in my own experience over the last 2 years, I see the sweet retail spot in the chain stores being between $19.99 to $39.99, with right in the middle at $29.99 kind of being the bullseye. If $5,900 is the average price spent nationwide, we can assume the independent jeweler is looking at maybe about an $8,000 sweet spot today, while the chain jeweler is looking around $3,000, which all makes sense and gets us right to our national average. Of course, there are always going to be exceptions and outliers to all of this, but the point is that the trends affecting our industry do indeed vary greatly, both by region as well as market segment. Bottom line, to be successful, you must understand your market. So this brings us to our third and final insight of this podcast, which will be the trends of natural mined diamonds versus other non-traditional stones being used in bridal jewelry. This is a really interesting and hot topic right now. I am a member of a certain Facebook group, which consists of over 20,000 retailers and wholesalers in North America. And this particular topic is probably the one topic that always gets both the most responses as well as gets the rawest emotion out of their members. Okay, according to the Knott's 2019 Bridal Survey, the most popular center stone in an engagement ring is a diamond, which accounts for 86% of all engagement ring sales. According to the Knott, the other most popular stones, in order of popularity, are moissanite at 19%, sapphire at 18%, and morganite at 12%. This is interesting. Although, if I frame this within my own experience, moissanite is nowhere near the top. I have heard that a few of the larger retailers have supposedly been doing a healthy business within moissanite, but I'm not really sure about that. And interestingly enough, there's really no mention of lab-grown diamonds, but of course, this data was compiled probably in late 2017, 2018, which was really before the lab-grown diamonds really hit their full momentum. So I think that's why we saw those kind of numbers and those examples coming out. I have also been hearing that sales of rings with no stones have been picking up, but I have not seen any actual statistics which would back up that statement, other than just having a few of my buyers mention that to me. So let's get to the part of this insight which I really want to bring up, lab-grown diamonds. Without question, this is far and away the single biggest trend in diamonds which I have seen certainly over the last 15, 20 years, probably over the course of my full career. Full disclosure, just about every single side holder, including us, has gotten involved in this end of the business. In one way or the other, the story is just too big. If you're in the diamond engagement ring business, lab-grown diamonds, or LGD, will definitely be having an impact on your business. So what does this all mean? Some retailers will not touch lab-grown. They see them as an inferior product. It's not real. It's an insult to mined stones. Yet others see them as an industry savior, a bridge to the future, a way to lure back some of the young consumers that honestly might have been inclined to spend some of their hard-earned money on other things such as travel and exotic adventures and whatnot. I absolutely do not want to take a position here either for or against. My purpose today is just to lay out some facts and acknowledge that the introduction of mass market lab-grown diamonds into the marketplace is like a David to the industry's Goliath. Lab-grown diamonds have definitely forced the mining and cutting companies to rethink how they approach the future. According to industry researcher and analyst Edan Golan, lab-grown diamonds currently account for 1.5% of total diamond sales at specialty jewelry retailers. He also goes on to state that bridal jewelry accounts for 87% of all the lab-grown diamond sales as of April 2020. I personally believe that the percentage of total diamond sales will be rising significantly over the next 12 months. It is fair to expect that lab-grown diamonds will be promoted heavily this holiday season by the large chain stores, which of course will have an umbrella effect on the rest of the industry. So is this trend being driven by the fact that today's consumer wants a quote-unquote clean stone, which arguably leaves quote-unquote a greener footprint, or is it being driven simply by the fact that many consumers just want a bigger, better stone at a lower price? I don't have any actual stats on that, but I would certainly put my money on the latter. Over the last 2 to 3 years that lab-grown diamonds have really hit the market in a big way, the industry has seen quite a significant drop in price. De Beers' own brand, Lightbox, of course, made a huge impact as they entered into the direct-to-consumer market with a stated price of all stones, regardless of size, selling for $800 per carat. For now, they have a very strict strategy of only playing in the fashion side, not the bridal side, which I think was a very, very, very intelligent strategy on their part. At the beginning, I would say that I was seeing larger, over 1 carat center stones retailing for around 25% to 35% lower than the same natural mined stone. Today, if I take a look at one of the largest online retailers of loose stones that promotes both mined and lab-grown, here's what I am seeing. A 1 carat GVS1 XXX is currently listed in their listings, selling between $6,350 to $7,450. Looking at the exact same specs, only in lab-grown, their inventory is selling between $2,080 to $2,880. Now that's about a 65% lower price than the same mined or natural stone. On the wholesale side, I am seeing lab-grown being offered about 75% to 85% below wrap. This is a pretty startling drop in price from where lab-grown had first entered the market only a short while back. So let's bottom line this, at least as it pertains to my podcast. Lab-grown diamonds are the single biggest trend in diamond jewelry that I have seen in quite a while. Again, I am not here to either praise or condemn, but clearly they are here to stay. And as a smart retailer, wholesaler, manufacturer, I think it is crucial to develop your strategy within lab-grown diamonds. Whatever that may be, as it pertains to your own particular business, for sure they are not going away. Over the next few years, I would expect to see production only increase as the R&D costs involved start getting absorbed and more machines become readily available to the industry. I am quite sure there will be another podcast in our series which will focus on lab-grown diamonds in way more detail. However, till then, you definitely want to buckle up. It's definitely going to be an interesting ride. So this brings us to the end of my podcast. I want to sincerely thank you for listening in, and I hope that you have found at least some of this interesting and hopefully somewhat informative. When talking about trends, stats and numbers are always going to be the backbone of anyone's analysis. But just as someone in the medical field can do their research in a lab, how that research acts outside of that lab in a real, non-sterile environment can possibly present an entirely different set of results. Same here. We can look at a lot of different stats based upon a national model, but all of us have different circumstances we deal with. One, we are all located in different areas, and two, we all have different customer bases. It is crucial to each of us to understand that data is out there, and most importantly, we all need to be able to utilize that data in a way that it becomes relevant to our own business. That is really the core of what I was hoping to bring out over the last 20 minutes or so. So once again, thank you for sharing some of your valuable time with me. Thanks again to the Plum Club for allowing me the opportunity to create this podcast. Please remember to check back every month as we will be presenting new and informative podcasts for you to check out. So once again, this is Jeff Cohn saying thank you and have an incredible day.